You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 36. So we have quite an exciting episode, a lot of things happening for this week. So I'll jump right into it. The theme for this week is the suspense account. It most directly relates to this week's film review, which is a film double feature, something that was recently added to Amazon Prime streaming. So there's that. The Star Wars profile is directly related to that, or at least how I saw it directly related to that. And then I'll sort of make a case on how it kind of relates to a couple of news items, most notably one news item for this week, which caught everyone by surprise. So there is that. So with that, I'll jump right into it. So in the accounting world, a suspense account is used as a location to record unclassified debits and credits. Essentially, what this means is that it's an account that a company uses where they have received funds or they're spending funds that are unclassified. So maybe they received money that they don't know who it belongs to, or they're due a credit, they're not sure what it's for. They know it belongs to a vendor, but it may not, they're not sure how it relates, or they don't want to tie it to inventory because it'll offset records. So the suspense account is used and noted for which account it belongs to, if they have, or noted for which with the information that they know it belongs to. This still appears on the company's general ledger, so the general ledgers and financials still have an accurate indication of the funds that the company has spent and how much they've received, but it'll show up as unclassified. So if an auditor looks at it, they'll know that it's something that the company doesn't know how it relates, or they're unable to verify what it belongs to. So in my experience, I know that a suspense account can be used for funds that are received, so let's say from international accounts, and a confirmation is not received that a particular customer has sent that money. I may know that it belongs to that customer, but I still want that backup just in the case, in the event that there's two customers with the same dollar amount invoice, or it's in the similar invoice range, or I've seen funds from a similar third-party banking service, and I want to make sure that I'm applying it to the right place so that suspense account is used. So that's kind of what a suspense account does, is that intermediary between inaccurate classification and hitting a customer or vendor, and the actual receipt of those funds or whatever that unknown figure is for. So you kind of bridge that gap so you can record it properly and in the right time period, the right date, and all of that, and have it classified properly. So with that, I will jump right into this week's tech news. So to start it off, Google has dropped the invite requirement for joining Google Fi. So if you're in the market for a wireless service that is probably more affordable, or you wanted a Nexus program or wanted a Nexus device with a wireless service that doesn't tie you to a contract, then you can now join Google Fi without any issue. Yahoo Mail for Android got an update this week to now have more themes, subfolders, and a few additional features for categorizing your email, so definitely look out for that update. Google Photos for iOS got an update to now support live photos on the iPad Pro, so look out for that more integrated support there. The SpeedPass Plus app by ExxonMobil got updated and now support Android Pay, so if you're an Apple Pay user, then the SpeedPass app supports that. Google Docs got updated to now support exporting files in the EPUB format. So if you're writing that novel and you're submitting your novel to a bookstore that supports the EPUB format, then definitely check that out. As far as I know, the Amazon Kindle does not support it, so you would still need to export as a PDF or Word document. I forget what other file formats they support, but I think I read that it does not support the EPUB format at the moment. But as far as I know, I think sites or companies like, I think it was Barnes & Noble, do support it. So definitely do your research before using the EPUB format. In the exciting bit of news for this week, the first Android N developer preview or developer build was released this week. At the moment, it supports the Nexus devices, so I think, as far as I can tell, the Nexus 5 and higher, so look out for that. It does bring things like various performance enhancements, UI improvements, custom toggles, app tiles, and notification groupings, things like that, so look out for that. That is actually the tie that I wanted to make with the theme of this week for Suspense, because it is in that intermediary between the official build and where the current official builds of Android. So you're kind of in the middle. You do need to be careful where when you're working with this, there are still bugs and missing features, things like that. So just heads up things there. But it is that middle ground between an official release and official new release and the current official release of Android. In other news, though, Google has made it easier to plan vacations when making your trip, or starting your search for that trip. So essentially what you'll do is you'll start searching for a city name and add the word destination. So it'll get help by giving you flight information, key bits of interest in those locations and things like that. So it's all grouped with that various bits of information. And then you get personalized results as well. So if you want to add custom filters like Hawaii scuba diving vacation or Hawaii scuba diving destination, you get more tailored results related to scuba diving. The Opera browser is going to be getting an update, if it hasn't already started rolling out, with a built-in ad blocking, so you don't, or without the need for extension. So if you want to browse, so it's kind of like along the lines of AdBlock browser, where ad blocking is enabled by default, but this is in the Opera browsing framework. And finally, with the Wikipedia app for iOS. Got updated with 3D touch support. So basically when you long press on the Wikipedia icon, you'll be able to jump to random articles and nearby articles without having to open the app. So that's all there is for that. So with that, I will jump into this week's app review. So it's sort of related to the theme, but I also wanted to give a brief look into how the image image collage for each week is put together. And this app actually is that intermediary, because I have my image, different images for the week, and until I put them together, they are in that middle area for how the layout I want and how I want it to look. So the app is InstaSize. What this is it's a photo collage creation app and minor photo editing app. So what it does, or what I started using it for when I first heard about it, was use it to post full-size images to Instagram. So if I took a screenshot and I wanted to have the full image show up, or I took a wide angle shots of 16:9 and I wanted to post it to Instagram, I would use InstaSize to import the photo, make the background black, and post it to Instagram. But that is actually the basic use of it. You can also use it to create a collage. So what you do is select your initial image. You don't necessarily have to make this or keep that in the same place as you want. Let's say you may pick one by default or realize you want to move it. You can still change your image, but you'll pick one of your images. And then in the app, you'll pick the collage style that you want. So if you want a long vertical image on the left and two smaller boxes on the right, three horizontal images, three vertical images, four square images, then you have a number of different collage options you can pick, and then you select the one you want, you double tap the plus icon, and you add the different pictures as you go. Once you're done, then you can resize the images if you want, so zoom in or zoom out. If you do them one by one, then as you add images, they'll reset to their default size. So just a quick tip there. I don't really mind either way, but just a hint into that in case it resets for you. If it doesn't happen to you, it might just be my device, but there is that. But once you set your images that you want to use, you can also include a number of other things as well. So there are filters. So if you want to have a blue tint or red tint, gold tint, make and or basically have a variety of different filters to make it your image maybe look vintage or have a different look to it, then you can do that as well. You can also crop the image. So let's say you want to take out a portion of the image, or let's say you added some text and you want to get rid of it, you can do that as well because you don't have the original, then there's that option as well. You can set the background color as well. So for me, I generally use black as a background, but if you want to have red, green, blue, yellow, all those different colors are available as well. But there are, and then in addition to that, you can also download additional patterns. So if you want a Christmas background or black and white dots, you can do that as well. The final bit of things you can add is also text. So let's say you have a 16 by 9 image that you want to import to Instagram. You can do that, move that around a little bit, and then add some text so you can have a description or have some additional information that you may not want to put as a caption. Or let's say even if you're creating the image and you're posting it to Facebook even or Twitter or wherever, then you can have that text there as well. But that's essentially it for that. So when you're done, you have a number of different ways to save or share the image. So you can save the image to your gallery. So if you want to just have it stored, then you can do that. Or you can share it. You can save it, share it to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Google+, email it, WhatsApp it, SMS it, whatever. You have a few general options for basically social media sites, but if you want to share it somewhere else, it does integrate well with the Android share menu, so you can share it to other places as well. But that's really all there is for that. So the app is available for free. It's available in the Amazon App Store, in Google Play, and the Apple App Store. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's a very handy app. I've used it for quite some time, and it's one of those photo editing or photo apps that I actually can't live without. I use it on a regular basis I use it for sharing or creating the photo images for Life of an Accounting Droid. But if you do have those images that still don't fit to the, fit to Instagram with their updated photo resizing, then InstaSize can help with that. I know with screenshots, it still cuts off the top and bottom of the image in Instagram, so InstaSize can get that full screenshot posted. And still in Instagram, I think larger images or weirdly widescreen images still will not fit if memory serves. So the easiest way to get it shared is by using InstaSize. So I'll have a link in the show notes to the YouTube preview so you can get a general sense of what the UI looks like and check it out from there. But that is all for that. So after the short break, I will jump into this week's entertainment. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you in a couple of great and exciting ways. So if you want to help expand the show and the network, we do have a couple of Patreons set up to help you support the show and the network in whatever way you can. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to see more posts on the feed, you want to have an Android app to quickly and easily get to the post and via different categories and things like that. Let's say you want to have a Q&A segment, then be sure to visit patreon.com/patelin01 to check out the various patron levels and what kind of things you can unlock by helping to support the show. You can also help support the network by visiting patreon.com/geekio. This helps our flagship show go ad-free. So let's say you just want to blaze through the show, listen to all of it uninterrupted. You can do things like that. Let's say you wanted a weekly D&D episode, helping to contribute to the Geek.io Patreon can help do that as well as adding special patron content, adding a new show, getting more con coverage, all of the great geeky nerdy stuff that we all love. So that's patreon.com/geek.io for all of that good stuff, as well as patreon.com/patelin01 to help the show expand as well. But that is all for that, so back to the show. And welcome back to the episode, everybody. Quite a bit of stuff to go through for this week. A few different important bits of entertainment news. A few things of what I watched, not as much as always. Mainly because one show didn't have an episode this week, and I kind of want to say a couple of shows are their season's ending and only one started, so kind of started back up. So a few there, so didn't really continue watching the X-Files. So there's that. And then after that, I'll have a film review double feature, so I'll get into that a little bit more, followed up with the Star Wars profile. That would be that for the segment. So with that, I'll jump right into the news. So to start it off, a second trailer was released this week for Captain America Civil War. So that's up on YouTube. I'll have a link in the show notes to the trailer to check it out. It was pretty cool. They showed a few more scenes and things like that, along with the preview of Spider-Man. So it's pretty cool as far as it goes there. I haven't really decided on how much or dislike or don't like the suit, but it does look pretty nifty. So we'll see how he plays into the Marvel Universe as well. They also announced for Captain America Civil War that the runtime of the movie is going to be 146 minutes, so a little bit over 2 hours for that. This week, or in other news, Amazon launched a new internet-based live show called Style Code Live. It's kind of like QVC, but for the internet, so in case that's your thing, definitely check that out. For those of you who want to learn more about how the Star Wars The Force Awakens was made, it's a documentary set to premiere at South by Southwest on March 14th. As far as I could tell, it's also going to be included with the release of the Blu-rays, DVDs, and all of that, so in case you miss it there, then, or miss it at South by Southwest, then it should, I think it's going to be available elsewhere, but don't quote me on that at the moment. And finally, Game of Thrones Season 6 is scheduled for release on April 24th. The season is going to start on April 24th, 2016. A trailer was also launched for that, so look out for that to get more views of the wars and armies and all of that good stuff. There will be a link for that as well in the show notes. As far as what I watched this week, I had a chance to watch Horace and Pete. Technically, it's season one, episode six. I want to kind of say it's season two, episode one, because they did say that it is the start of act two. So there is kind of that break there. But if you're when you're buying it online, you'll just see it as episode six. I also had a chance to watch Black Sails season three, episode seven. So we have more going there as far as Flint trying to gather more troops and preparing for the battle, and him discussing with Silver about how to keep that he's not dead, not necessarily a secret, but continue the legend of Captain Flint. I also kind of like this episode especially because with the Black Book and that Silver has a long memory, I liked how they brought that bit of history and trivia into the show for Long John Silver and kind of have a backstory there. I don't know how factual or not factual that is, but I like the way they presented it. I also had a chance to watch The Walking Dead season 6 episode 12, Not Tomorrow Yet. So we see Carol getting into a relationship with one of the guys, and essentially an attack on Negan's savior. So we kind of see what's going on there, with the cliffhanger being the lady over the intercom. So while the Rick group thinks that it's a success, and we kind of see at the end that it didn't go as well as they had planned. I also had a chance to watch Better Call Saul season 2 episode 4, Hero. This kind of deals with the repercussions of Saul's actions as far as creating the video. So pretty interesting thing there. So we're kind of seeing how he's trying to balance the line between kind of the personal dilemmas and issues with working for a legitimate firm, and that he can't do everything that he wants. And finally, I had a chance to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3, Episode 11. This is a mid-season return for Season 3. The episode is bouncing back, so we get to see a little bit. We basically are catching up with where everyone's at, what's going on with everybody, and the deals that Coulson has to make to ensure that S.H.I.E.L.D. remains a viable operation and they're not constantly under attack by everybody. And finally, I had a chance to watch the James Bond movie Thunderball. This actually relates to the film reviews for this week. So I was browsing around Amazon Video last week, and I was checking to see how far into From Russia with Love I had gone into. I rented the movie and didn't get a chance to finish it, so I was going to continue, and I saw that it was streaming, so I decided to check and see how many Bond movies were streaming or if it was just the one, and I realized that a number of them are streaming. So for this week's film review, I'll get into those movies there, but it's going to be two Bond movies. But in addition to those two movies, I also had a chance to watch Thunderball, the fourth movie in the series. I didn't watch Goldfinger because it's not streaming, but if it shows up, then I'll definitely give it a watch. But I'm actually kind of liking the movies. I'd seen them on and off before. I don't remember seeing them in their entirety. So a lot of the scenes are familiar. A lot of the key scenes are familiar. So I may have seen them over the years as well. But nothing quite rang a bell as far as story or what happened. But now that I've seen these movies in their entirety, it makes a lot more sense. And knowing which movie they are in the series also plays into the kind of movies they are. So definitely worth a watch there. So that's actually all there is for that. So I'll jump into this week's film review. So I'm actually combining the two movies because from doing a bit of research online, they're actually sequels to each other. So I watched the first Bond movie, Dr. No, and I followed it up with From Russia with Love. Dr. No was released on May 8th, 1963. From Russia with Love was released on May 27th, 1964. So about a year apart. Dr. No is 110 minutes long, with From Russia with Love being 115 minutes. The summary for Dr. No is that a resourceful British government agent seeks answers in a case involving the disappearance of a colleague and the disruption of the American space program. So this particular movie is most notable for Dr. No himself and basically Spectre being the key criminal organization in the Bond universe, but also the introduction for, I forget the guy's name, but Leiter, the American CIA agent Leiter. So we see that partnership here. I made note of this because I watched License to Kill a couple of weeks ago. I think about 2 weeks ago, and there's a team up there where Bond goes to Leiter's wedding. So this is actually the start of that friendship. The summary for From Russia with Love is James Bond willingly falls into an assassination ploy involving a naive Russian beauty in order to retrieve a Soviet encryption device that was stolen by Spectre. So the premise of From Russia with Love actually is that it's a sequel to Dr. No, and Spectre is actually trying to kill the agent who took out Dr. No. In this case, it happens to be Bond, so they're training to take him out, so that explains the opening scene. But it turns into MI6 wanting to also recover the Lecter machine, and Bond having to determine who he can trust, who he can't trust, and all of that. So good follow-up to the initial release. Both movies were directed by Terrence Young, so in case you know the name, he is most notable for having the two. So in case the continuity worked for you, then that explains that. On IMDb, Dr. No has a rating of 73%, with From Russia with Love having a 75% rating. So that's actually decent enough ratings, not overly great, not overly slow. But I think that watching them now, they're probably more of movies of their time as far as the video quality, locations, and all of that stuff. The one thing I forgot to mention also was that the one notable thing for From Russia with Love is the introduction of Q Branch, and Q being Bond's quartermaster. So while Dr. No didn't really have anything fancy as far as gadgets or anything like that. With from our show with Love, we have the introduction for the of the special gadgets that Bond is given. So things like the, I forget if there was a watch in this one, but we do have the explosive or the locked briefcase that is set to explode if the right combination is not included. With Thunderball, we had the introduction of the gun change, so the Walter PPK and the Geiger counter watch and thing, and the Geiger counter camera and those kinds of things. So that's really all as far as the summary goes. But as far as a review for the movies, as I mentioned, one of the things I did like was I finally now know the origins for Q Branch and kind of where they started with all the gadgets. So if you're watching later Bond movies, so for me, from personal experience, I want to say Pierce Brosnan, Bond, and onward. If you want to kind of see why how they got to as many gadgets as they did, this is kind of where it started. So very few, and then they just built from there. As far as the one thing I vaguely remember, I remember maybe talking to friends or reading online, was that when with the Daniel Craig Bond movies, they kind of started steering away from the gadgets again and kind of going back to basics as far as those kinds of things are concerned. So if whether or not you liked it, if you watched the first two Bond movies with Sean Connery, you do see that there are very few gadgets and they're all relatively practical and rely more on his ingenuity rather than technology. And I mean, granted, they probably worked their way into it, so it's ingenuity and technology, but the original Bond movie started as more ingenuity and using technology as things as the plot progresses, but that is about it. The one thing that I found odd about this is that if everyone has a kicking knife, why not be different and put it somewhere else? So the one thing that they used, not a lot, but enough, was the knife in the shoe. And I got to thinking that it's kind of a weapon of its time, probably. But while it is useful, I would figure that they might want to try putting it somewhere else. So rather than just in the front, maybe on off to the side a little bit so you have a different angle, or put one in the front, one in the back, and try to mix it up a little bit to keep your enemy off guard. And finally, the thing that was that's intriguing that you see in these movies compared to movies nowadays is that 72 hours seems like long enough for the bad guys to do whatever they evil deed they want to do, and then enough time for the good guys to make their plan, do research, and defeat the bad guys. So nowadays, kind of along the lines of fit within a day, maybe a day and a half or two, and by the second day everything's being rounded up and cleared up, so everything's on a faster time frame. But in this case, it's like we only have 24 hours to do this, we only have 14 hours, and everyone's starting to freak out as far as will the job get done or not. So overall, the movies are definitely worth watching. I actually enjoyed them. I do think Connery's a good actor in general, but he does play the Bond. He does play Bond well, so I do like the choice they made here. I probably figured if they had gone with someone else, it might have been a make or break for the movies. But in this case, it seems like it just worked, and it's one of those things where it's hard to imagine someone else. But for me, I've actually just started watching On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and I'm kind of getting that vibe where they picked. I forget the actor's name, but they're kind of going with the same kind of frame and look as Connery to kind of keep Bond looking the same. So we'll see how it plays out, how much it switches up the style a little bit, but you kind of see how Bond changes up over the years. But kind of maybe watching them in progression will change my opinion of that a little bit. So I do recommend watching them if you haven't seen them, but overall, good movies. I do like origin stories for characters, so it's good to, or I like that I'm able to go back and see the earlier Bond movies and compare them to later versions. So that is all for that. So with that, I will jump right into this week's Star Wars profile. And in this case, since the film review is related to spies, I figured I'd cover a spy that comes to mind for me, who's not necessarily a spy per se, but did collect information in, or is known for her information collection in the Star Wars universe, and this character is Mara Jade. She's a human female who's about 5 1/4 feet tall and was born 17 years prior to the Battle of Yavin. In case you don't know who Mara Jade is, she was actually a Force-sensitive individual. My memory was that she was minorly Force-sensitive, but I guess she was very, very Force-sensitive. But she was taken in by Emperor Palpatine at a young age to be an experiment to start his apprentice program. So rather than just have Darth Vader be his main apprentice to follow Darth Bane's rule of two, he wanted to start an apprentice program where he could have less Force-sensitive individuals be his hands throughout the galaxy. So if he needed something done and it wasn't deemed important to use Vader to go out and do it, he would send this other person. So kind of like a sub-apprentice to do his work. After the death of the Emperor, she became a smuggler with Talon Card and essentially lived that life for a while, and she still had the dreams of killing Luke, or she was given dreams or memories by the Emperor to kill Luke Skywalker. This was done prior to the Emperor's death, essentially because I guess at some point when the Emperor realized that Luke was a threat, he eventually wanted him killed, and regardless of whether or not he was alive, he wanted his vengeance. Eventually, when she did meet up with Luke, he charmed her over, and she realized that he wasn't worth killing, and she didn't want to kill him anyways. So she started to learn more of the Force from Luke Skywalker, and instead of just knowing the dark side, she also learned the light side of the Force. Her other master was Kyle Katarn, and so they trained her, and if you're not too familiar with the legacy, she ended up marrying Luke Skywalker, and they had a son named Ben. Her primary job, though, for the better part of her life was being the Emperor's hand. So essentially, it started off as personal guard to the Emperor, but also complete sensitive missions effectively. So if the Emperor needed something done quietly and it was deemed important but not so important for Vader to do it, then he would send his hands out to do it. Her third main function while the Emperor was alive and prior to her meeting Luke and leaving the dark side was to actually kill him because this was the Emperor's wish. So kind of like the clones who had the memory implanted with for Order 66, she had this order implanted in, or not implanted, but trained into her mind to kill Skywalker, but I guess it wasn't hard-coded, so she had that option to not do it. A bit of fun fact about her, though, is that she, or sorry, a bit her most notable achievement was, or is that she had a really deep connection to the Force, so it allowed her to hear Palpatine's voice anywhere in the galaxy. So whether she was on Coruscant with him, or let's say she was on Tatooine on a mission, she could still speak to the Emperor. He would speak directly into her mind, and she would have her instructions, and she could go about her job. She had so much trust from Palpatine as well, though, that she was also granted time for leisure. So this was something that very few other people had. So she was that good at her job that she was actually allowed to have time off. So, where she didn't really know what to do with herself because she was good at her job, but she had that option to relax if she wanted to. A bit of fun fact, though, is that she also had at one point spied on Vader himself and delivered reports of his activities to the Emperor. She did feel split, though, as far as she had to report because she felt Vader's split decision about finding Skywalker finding Luke Skywalker and turning him over to the Emperor, because I guess that's before he even knew it was his son, I guess the Force was telling Vader that something is important about this kid and he shouldn't be turned over to the Emperor, and Mara Jade actually did not say too much about it. So while the Emperor had created her to be evil, she was not as evil as maybe the Emperor would have wanted. So that is all for that. So after the short break, I'll jump into this week's life tip. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to help support the show, but you're not up for a recurring payment, or maybe it's not in your budget for the month for a recurring payment, you can still help the show and the network grow and help contribute to the shows that you love to hear and all of that good stuff. First off, you can visit or check out some of the great deals we have going on by visiting geek-io.net/support. You can check out some of our sponsors like T-Fury, Tweaked Audio, ProXPN. If you shop on Amazon, we have an affiliates link, so definitely check those all out. If you see something you like and you want to help us out, you can click on those links and you'll get some very great deals and promotions and help us out at the same time. Let's say you want to contribute to Life of an Accounting Droid directly, but you don't really feel up for signing up for Patreon, or as I mentioned, you can't really do a recurring payment. You can also contribute via PayPal by visiting paypal.me/patelN01. When you make the contribution, let's say you wanted to go to a particular segment, like you want me to review a specific app or watch a particular TV episode or movie or anything like that, by contributing this way, your money can go straight to that particular feature, that particular part of the show. Or if you just love the show or the episode, then you can help contribute that way as well with whatever you feel comfortable with giving. Let's say you also prefer to read, or you know someone who would enjoy the content of the show but prefers to read instead, or they're always on the go and want to have that same thing on their Kindle, for example, or wherever you get the Kindle app, be sure to check out Journal of an Accounting Droid, which is basically all the same content you get on the show, but in the Kindle bookstore via an ebook format. You can check out all the latest releases by visiting author.patelN01.com. There's also a link to my Amazon author profile, so if you want to get notified as soon as a new journal is published, then there's also an email subscription link available, so you can easily get buy it yourself or share it with anyone you might think is interested or anything like that. So be sure to check out all the great links at geek-io.net/support for all of our great sponsors, paypal.me/patelN01 for one-time contributions, and author.patelN01 for the Journal of an Accounting Droid ebooks. But that is all for that, so back to the show. So for this week's tip, I actually wanted to cover something simple. So it's not necessarily something that bothers me, but something that is quite useful to know how to do, and that is to take a screenshot. So in this case, I'll explain how to do it on Windows 7 and on Android. Windows XP is a little bit different, but I figured most people at this point should be on Windows 7 or newer, so it should be pretty straightforward. But screenshots are important for a number of reasons. So basically, you want to take a picture of something, but only show what you need to show. So for example, let's say you need to show someone that you submitted a wire, or you sent a check and you need to provide a copy of it, then you can take a screenshot of that, of the bank account, but only limited to the line item you need to show. So that way you don't have to send your entire statement, you don't have to scan it in and cut out other parts, or you don't have to do that fine arts project where you cover the entire page except for the line you need and then make that copy or scan it, and it may turn out imperfect or the quality is not as good as you want. If you go online and you take a screenshot, you get a perfect high-res copy of that line item. With a screenshot, you can also keep a copy of pictures or send copies of pictures that otherwise can't be saved. So let's say you're on a website and you realize you want to send it to someone because, for example, you might be doing wedding invitations and it's a good idea that you would like to use, or it's a funny picture but the website will not let you save it and it doesn't give you that option, then by taking a screenshot, it'll let you save the picture and you can send it as a joke, post it to social media, things like that, and then link back to the original image so you give the proper credit. My biggest tip that I like to give for screenshots, though, is that when you're taking that screenshot on your mobile device, is to rotate your device between landscape and portrait to get the biggest possible screenshot. So sometimes pictures are in a wide format, so by turning your device, you can get a screenshot of a bigger screenshot of the whole image rather than a small block with a black bars on the top and the bottom. So just by turning, you might be able to get a bigger picture. Same thing if you want to zoom in and you want to have more of the picture on that zoomed in screenshot, then by turning your phone device and then zooming in, you can get a better screenshot of that image. So the easiest way to do it on Windows 7, or as far I assume Windows 8 and 10 have the same feature, is by using the snipping tool. So when you're on the page or on the screen that you want to take a screenshot of, opening the screenshot tool will let you drag your cursor around the area you want to screenshot, and it'll show you a preview of what it looks like. From there, you can save it and then file it away, print it out, email it, post it to Facebook, whatever you need to do with it. On Android, by holding down the power button and the volume down button, it'll take a screenshot on your device. This should be available for most devices, but some devices like HTC have a menu option for a screenshot. I think Samsung and LG have a similar thing, but I'm not sure. I haven't used one of their devices lately, but usually volume down and the power button clicked at the same time will take a screenshot of whatever page you're on. So let's say even if you're wondering how people post the images of funny conversations they had, that's kind of what they're doing. They have the conversation open, they take a screenshot, and they post it from there. On iOS, I think it's something similar, something with the power buttons and the volume buttons, but I'm not sure. I want to say more than likely it's the home button and the volume button, but doing a quick Google search will solve that. I'm not sure on Mac how to do it there. If you're still using Windows XP, then you can usually, the easiest way I found it without having any additional software is to simply push the print screen button and then paste your screen into Microsoft Paint, and then you can crop and adjust as you want from there. If you have Photoshop or GIMP installed, you can copy your screenshot into there as well and edit the picture that way as well. So there is that. But basically, it's something that I find very useful and simple to do for me. Also, every so often I want to change the wallpaper on my device, and it's and I want to use a picture that I saw on Instagram. So what all I do is I take the screenshot, and then on my phone I have Snapseed installed, so I'll use Snapseed to crop out the anything around the picture that I don't need, and then I might add a couple of filters like HD or HDR or drama or anything like that to sharpen it up a little bit, and I'll save that new image, and there's my new wallpaper. So pretty nifty thing is at that if you would need to use a screenshot. There are easier ways of setting Instagram pictures as your wallpaper, but if you don't do it that often, then maybe taking a screenshot is the way to go. But that is all for that. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com, or you can find me on Twitter at patelhan01. If you need for links to my Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, anything like that, you can visit patelhan01.com. For this show or any show on the Geek.io network, be sure to visit geek-io.net. But that is all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.